day and welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Here today, Didi Lauman and Neil Kleinberg of Clinton Street Banking Company. But first, a thank you to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch. It's the nation's largest single source supplier of free range, all natural, grass fed, and grass finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more info, HearstRanch.com.
That sounds good, man. I want some beef.
We got some for you if you need it.
And that's grass from 1865. That's pretty great grass.
Old grass. Petrified grass.
Yeah, baby.
Nice.
So we already know we're going to have a good show because these two are a freaking riot.
They're pumped.
Hoot and a holler.
We're here. We're queer. Get used to it.
They are going to have their own show afterwards, too. Didi and Neil, I had the honor of working with on the Clinton Street Baking Company cookbook.
Yeah, baby.
Thank you again for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Amazing
but
photos.
We get so many people saying, man, those photos are crazy.
Yeah, and I didn't know how to operate their iPhone taking photos of themselves in the studio right now, but
that's all right.
That's another story.
We'll give you
story.
A lesson.
I was also a customer for a whole bunch of years. I think 6 years. You guys have been open for 8 years in the Lower Side, right?
Well, almost 10.
Yeah.
So I've been
2001 we started.
Ever since I moved back to Brooklyn, I've been an avid customer and eater of your pancakes and I think the whole menu itself 10 times over.
Thanks. Wow, thank you.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
So when I got the call, the email, whatever mode of communication it was, to work on this cookbook with you, I didn't have to think twice. I mean, I was in.
Except when it came part to saying how much money is this in it for me.
I was
not even true.
Yeah, I said yes no matter what. I don't even know what I got paid.
You guys, I do.
Yeah.
I negotiated that deal.
You guys paid me enough in pancakes that it will last a lifetime. But this isn't just about the cookbook and about Clinton Street. This is about you two. And, you know, the book itself has obviously amazing recipes and food, but it's also a love story, and it's about how you met and how you both, came to love butter. Mm-hmm. What I love is when Neil and Didi signed the cookbooks, it says what? For love and butter?
With love and butter.
Yeah. And it's so true.
Yeah, it's true.
We owe a little of that to our designer, Daisuke Sumatsu, who originally, many years ago, did our first postcard for us, and he came up with a very cool concept with the biscuit, and he had heard Neil talking about how he makes it with love and butter, and he made a pie quadrant, and he, quadranted it out, making up the words, and it was love, like 12%.
82%.
Butter, and
82% butter, 1% something else, and the rest love.
Yeah. Cool. Has that ratio changed over the years?
Neil.
It's a little less love and a little more butter.
I thought those were one and the same. But I also want to talk a little bit about your prior lives. Didi came from the world of editorial publications, magazines specifically.
And then book publishing,
What magazine did you work for?
Well, I was an editor at Seventeen Magazine, starting when I was 21 years old.
Oh, here we go, Michael.
It's not that much of a yawn, because I edited first and then I wrote the advice column. On relationships.
Was it good advice?
Editor.
I read
my contraceptive
contraceptive
methods,
it was for kids.
Aren't working.
No, it was more like this. No, 18-year-olds, it was like 13-year-olds, and it was like, dear editor, my boyfriend doesn't know how to kiss me. It's very sloppy and gross.
What are 13-year-olds reading 17 for?
Well, it's aspirational.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You sure it's not reverse aspirational, anything. Like 40-year-old guys reading 17?
No, it's definitely not. So, I started there, and it was really fun. And we had like 6 million readers or something, or I don't know. It was a crazy circulation.
Yeah.
I got a lot of letters. Dear Didi.
Dear Didi.
It was
fun. That your actual column name?
No, it was just called Relating.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Neil, did you ever read it?
I was going to say something really bad, but I'm going to hold by. I never read 17. Anytime there was like a hot picture of a babe on the cover, I would flip through and try to find like the nude pictures, but they were never any, so I never read
17.
Or
kid,
legal, for that matter. Yeah.
I mean, my 20s,
17
Magazine is like 17, 18, 19-year-old.
But we have like, Michael, we have like 13 years between us.
Yeah.
So like when I was in college, when he was in college, I was...
Let's do the math.
I don't know how old...
When I was in college, Didi was like 13.
Yeah.
All right.
So just starting to read anyway. 17.
Yeah. But meanwhile, it's a good segue because I did also edit the food and snacks section.
Yeah.
Which was fun. And I was just telling, we were on Mike Colomico's show this morning, and I was telling him that I used to travel around the country to do these photo shoots, these lifestyle photo shoots. I'd go to like Des Moines and go to a high school and pick out cools, and we'd photograph them in their real style, and then I would interview them. And then this didn't really happen in Iowa, but say Nashville, I would say, hey, I'm the editor from 17 Magazine, the food editor, and I heard this restaurant is the number one restaurant. Can we get a reservation tonight? Like thinking it would never work, like 17 Magazine, what are you writing about, Cheese Whiz? And they always said yes. So we would get bumped up to like really good tables and get great treatment. And that's kind of what I did traveling the country. I would just go to the best restaurants in the cities.
And also when she was in like places like Iowa, she would search the thickest pork chop and try to like, you know.
Well, no, I did do that. Jane and Michael Stern wrote a cool article about all the places the caucus people eat at.
Yeah.
So I went to this place, the Machine Shed. Which they had cherry pie that's like, you know, as thick as a book, you know, like a fat tome, and huge fat pork chops, and it was unbelievable. And they have this Vietnamese restaurant that's kind of famous there, right in Des Moines, like in near the capital. Is there a capital there?
I think it is Des Moines. Yeah. I had to flash back to third grade to figure out all those.
I don't even think I learned that, but
Alaska,
I went.
Did you know?
And I went to this little hole in the wall Vietnamese place in Des Moines, which is such a crazy juxtaposition, and had an amazing Vietnamese meal. Otherwise, it was depressing, and I stayed in some big like DoubleTree hotel and ate those bad chocolate chip cookies.
I was about to say, can you tell that these two love road food? Like Jen and Michael Stern, it's like a Bible, but these two take it to the nth degree. I think when we went to Maine a couple years ago, you told me I was an idiot if I didn't stop at Red's in Wiscasset.
Right.
And now we stop every time, and part of that horrible traffic jam that is thusly created. But you can't miss it. Like, it's amazing. Clinton Street is kind of like that for New York. With the plethora and with the, you know, multitude of restaurants, it's still one of those places where someone's like, you have to go there. You'd be an idiot not to if you were in New York.
That's sweet.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Some of our friends say we're idiots for sending them on the weekends. And I say, you're an idiot for coming on the weekends. I mean, Monday through Friday is the best secret
or
in
nighttime
city.
Is the best.
I know. Even with working on your cookbook with you, I don't even dare touch weekends. And
Oh, you should.
Yeah.
You should text me.
Yeah.
But I just said it on the air. Did you ever come at night? That's the best time for me.
Oh, yeah. Or I think.
Like 6 o'clock.
That's book number 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fish tacos. Nighttime. Killer.
Yeah, but fried chicken.
I also wanted to talk about Neil's background because it's funny. It's like so akin to what my dad, not aspired to, but the places he hit, the places he ate. Neil cooked at Lundy's. If you don't know Lundy's, check it out. I mean, not anymore.
Yeah, I wish.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I wish we could actually go back there and have a
Well, we can go to Randazzo's right now.
Yeah, we could have a dozen clams at the Raw Bar. Yeah. And that was quintessential and amazing.
Tell us what Lundy's was when you were growing up, where you grew up. What Lundy's
was. I
grew
up on Avenue J and Kings Highway, and that was like Flatbushy, Midwood. And then Lundy's was on Ocean and Emmons, which is like on the farthest east part in the south of Brooklyn. It's Sheepshead Bay, where all the boats used to come in. You can go out for half-day fishing.
Oh, they still
do. Yeah, I know. And on that corner, it was like a massive corner. It was like a building, an Empire State Building, was Lundy's. And there were families that went every Sunday religiously to Lundy's and stood behind tables that weren't quite finished with their meal. And like the kid would hold a seat and that would be their table.
Yeah.
And your parents would send their kids around the whole dining room. It was like 1,100 seats. It was so crazy.
1,100?
Yeah, it was crazy. And when I worked at Lundy's, it was 800 seats. So it was like less than, you know, almost a third of it, you know, gone. But it was a big treat for me when I was a kid, 12, 13, and my dad would say, let's go to Lundy's, and we'd have a shore dinner, and it was like the most amazing experience, the biscuits and the lobster and the chicken and the potatoes and the waiters and these big, dark, Jamaican black men serving you, and they were so eloquent and they were so phenomenal, and you felt like a king going there.
Yeah.
And the food was just amazing, and how it came out of that place was like, you know, huge trays and oysters and fish.
Do you even know a 1,000-person restaurant in New York?
There are none anymore, except a tavern that went out, you know?
Yeah.
But that was my dream when I was like in cooking school. One day maybe I'll be the chef of a place like Lundy's. And then when I was like 17, there was a shooting in Lundy's. It was a whole family feud. Seriously, it was like 100 cop cars converged. It was like Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah.
One of the managers was holed up in Lundy's holding someone hostage, and he wouldn't leave, and the owners wanted to get him out, and it was this whole family feud, and it was closed after that, after the shooting. There was someone killed there. 17 years it was closed.
Whoa.
And I was, you know, a chef in New York for those years.
At places like Water Club and...
Yeah, the Water Club, Bridgewater's, the Plaza Hotel, had my own restaurant on the Upper West Side, worked in really great New York restaurants. And I got a call. Lundy's is reopening. Would you like to interview for the chef job? And I was like, are you kidding me? And I did. And it was like a 2.5 year project to work on it.
And it was the only crazy enough to take the job.
Yeah. I was like,
First, go in, clean up the blood. And
yeah.
It was crazy. It was a crazy undertaking. And I built a great staff from all of my connections at Bridgewater's and the Water Club. And I had my sous chef and a pastry chef. And I hired this one guy, Dikumbe, from Africa, who was a baker for Eli's up on the Upper East Side at the Vinegar Factory.
Yeah.
And he was used to baking in volume of all of these pastries and stuff. And I said, come with me to Lundy's and we'll make biscuits. And I had a little... in the attic of some building in Staten Island, I was kind of doing all the menus and the research and the development for the biscuit recipes. And finally, when the kitchen was up, we started, you know, just practicing all these recipes and stuff. And then we opened Lundy's, and it was like unbelievable.
Yeah. When did you open, and when did it again close?
We opened in 95. I think it was October, November 95, and then it closed in... I don't know. It went after I left, after like 2 years, it went on with
Times Square.
It went into Times Square and it folded. But after I was the original opening chef of Lundy's, and after me, there were 7 executive chefs the next 6 months.
Yeah.
No one could last.
Yeah.
And how I lasted for 2 years, I'll never know. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But it was also great. I got to go to the Fulton Fish Market twice a week with wads of cash in my pocket to buy like thousands and thousands of dollars worth of whole fish that we would bring back in trucks and break down swords and tunas and you know, cases upon salmon and crab meat and stone crab. And it was just amazing that I got to work with all of that volume. And I create this menu and try to reconstruct it from the 30s and 40s, yeah, and put some twists on it. They had a bad concept there with pastas, family style pastas and stuff like linguine and clam sauce and stuff like that, which didn't really work. And a wood burning oven for pizza, which really didn't work either. But it was the fish. It was the it was the seafood, the fish, the fried fish, the grilled stuff that was beautiful.
Now, from almost 1,000 seat place. How many seats do you have in Clinton Street?
32.
Didi, go ahead.
32.
Yeah, 32.
Yeah,
it's really 34, though, I think.
It's 32 plus those two seats in the window that no one ever wants to sit in.
Except at brunch when they have to. Yeah.
But it's funny. When we started getting busy at Clinton Street and doing like 100 or 200 brunches on the weekends, I would tell the guys next to me as we were cooking, okay, we have a full board. All the tickets came in. 32 people were sat. I said, guys, it can't get any worse than this. We cook 32 dinners, 32 brunches, and then we'll replenish our mise en place, and then we'll do another 32. All we have to do is 5 or 6 times of that a day on Sunday, and we're done.
Yeah.
And so I always looked at it as no matter how deep in the weeds you got, no matter how in the shits you were, no matter how many hollandaises broke on you, no matter what, no matter if you were running out of pancake batter, you only had to cook for those 32 people, and then you had like a 15 to 20 minute breather. Everyone got a cup of coffee, a bottle of water, whatever, and got themselves going again. And
except now we do it like 7 or 8 times.
Now we do it
10
times.
Oh, 10 times, yeah.
It's crazy.
That is
But it's
nutty.
Like automatic now. Yeah. It's like automatic.
Now, Didi, do you cook?
Yeah, I'm an amateur cook, and I had a paid cooking job, which I love to brag about and Neil loves to laugh about.
Yeah.
I don't make fun of that anymore,
Michael. It lasted 2 years.
Whereabouts?
At Integral Yoga Institute, where I was also a yoga instructor certified.
Yeah.
I taught yoga there, but first I got my cooking start volunteering in the kitchen. It's called Sangha. It's your volunteering part of the community. I assisted this Iranian cook, Amir, who's amazing. He's a dancer in the city and an actor. And then he cooks on the side. And he taught me how to do everything pretty much. And then I would work in the kitchen with like these Indian people, like this lady Andalama, who's this amazing Indian mama cook, you know, like
Andalama sounds like Indian mama.
Yeah, she was great. And like I learned all these amazing cultural spice influences and, you know, how to prep properly and how to cook vegetables and, you know, how to use ghee. I'd never even heard of ghee. You know, I came from a Jewish middle class Connecticut. Yeah.
But wait, I want to interrupt. Well, Didi's best cooking is not from the ashram and not from yoga and stuff. Her best cooking of the things that she likes to make or likes to eat, like at the house, she makes this amazing lemon pasta, which is just simple and totally delicious with anchovy and garlic and lemon zest and lemon juice, just tossed and coated with spaghetti. It's really delicious. She's made that really well.
Thanks. I make great eggs and stuff. I do.
Great eggs for Jade in the morning, and a great omelet and great scramble.
The best thing I got out of that experience, it was the 2 years of cooking every Wednesday for 60 people.
Yeah.
Was that they would give me, I know 60 is the number, but they would give me $60 in the morning. I'd go to the yoga teacher / monk / treasurer and get $60 from her, go downstairs to the natural food store, and then I could shop only with those $60 for the 60 people who are coming. I'm sorry, for 30 people who are coming.
Yeah.
I think it was 30 people. And then I would shop for 20 minutes. I'd go upstairs, and I had 3 hours to prepare everything. You know, I'd have those big hotel pans, and I still have the burn marks and everything, you know, because I was like such a novice.
Yeah.
Because I eventually took over the cooking from prepping and assisting, and I became the cook. And I earned like $44 and some change, you know, every Wednesday. And the greatest thing about it is that I had such a built-in sense of how much things cost. So I could go in with the $60 and walk away with like $59.99, you know, or $59.29 or whatever. And it was like a goal for me. And to this day, when I shop, it's just like this weird innate thing. I can go anywhere and I'll have, I don't even know how much, I have $16 in my pocket, and I'll walk away. It'll be $15.49.
Yeah.
I just have a really good sense of that.
Michael, if that were me, I would have put $50 worth of food and $10 I would have bought a dime bag.
Yeah.
Smoked it up and then gone in the kitchen and made like brown rice, man.
That's why she runs the business.
That's right.
That's why we're successful, because I can't do that shit.
So now all this cooking, you know, why did you guys go out to eat that one fateful night at Assault and Battery?
Yeah, well, I was looking. I was like super premenstrual, and it was just opening. I think was that the opening night, Neil? It was like the opening week.
It was one of the first few
one of
days
the first nights, maybe the third night. And it's across the street from me. And you know, I studied in London and lived in London, and I always was, you know, nostalgic for my London life. And I like basically put on like semi pajama sweat kind of outfit, which I was wearing, put a coat over it, like hardly brushed my hair, went out for like this PMS food, fried food fiesta, which I would only do like once a year.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and there was the owner. I knew him, you know, from the tea and city next door. We started talking, and there was Neil sitting there.
Wait 1 second. It's really funny. Like, Didi lived on Jane Street and Greenwich on the corner, and I worked on Greenwich Avenue, like between Charles and Perry or whatever. And it was almost like I was walking down Greenwich, and I had in my mind I was going to stop at Salt and Battery, buy a fish and chips order, and then take it home on the subway to go to Washington Heights where I lived.
Yeah.
Wait, and watch. And you were going to watch something really bad, like 60 Minutes or something. That's what you were going to do.
I was going to watch some show, and I had it all in my mind. It was like a was like a December night.
Yeah, it was cold.
And I was just wanted fish and chips. I wanted to cuddle up and whatever. And here I'm walking down, and Didi and I are like going to the same place. And at that moment,
with
we
the
converged.
Same motivation. We're both basically looking for comfort out of food,
yeah,
which tells you a lot about us, right? And nostalgia and whatever. And we struck up this conversation.
And maybe love.
About,
we were looking for love.
Yeah, well, I always was.
Looking for love in all the wrong places.
We have a guitars back here, too, if you guys want to jam out.
Oh, yeah, baby.
It's cool. I wish I knew how to play.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was definitely fortuitous, but I guess it was all, we were all waiting for that moment. I mean, we were both waiting for that moment. We must have passed each other 1,000 times on the street. And I've, you know, I used to go to the Tea and Sympathy and Assault and Battery a lot. I mean, not Assault and Battery a lot, because it was really fatty.
All you needed was that one.
Yeah.
One time.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
One time.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been back since.
Yeah, no, nor have I.
Maybe once.
Not even for, like, anniversary, Valentine's
Day? No.
We're not like that.
Yeah.
Plus, when I left that Jane Street apartment, which I had for 13 years, that was, like, my life, my work, my writing. You know, I wrote. I freelanced for a long time. I assisted this famous author. I did a lot of stuff from that apartment. Then I started a business with my yoga clothing and manufacturing in Hong Kong. And, like, the 9,000 boxes were all out of my studio. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So when I left that studio behind, I was happy to just, like, kiss away that life. That was my entire 20s was spent in that apartment on those streets. Excellent. It's pretty great.
Well, we're actually going to take a quick break right now and come back and talk about your new life.
Yeah, babe.
Wow.
Okay.
Sounds good. Excellent.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. Back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Didi and Neil of Clinton Street Baking Company.
And Community Food and Juice.
And Community Food. I had that in my notes.
Sorry.
I was going to plug it. Who I was honored to work with on their Clinton Street Baking Company cookbook. Now.
Oh, Michael, it did just go into a second printing. I forgot to tell you. Do you know that?
No.
Yes.
Well, congrats to
Thanks.
All of us.
Yeah, all of us. Yeah.
Uh-oh. Wait, is this the one? Yeah. I was supposed to try to put Megan in there.
Oh.
In my shout-outs, I thanked my cat and not my girlfriend.
Oh, but that was my fault because I didn't really let you edit it. I gave it to them, and then they just took it away.
Yeah, but now Mason's strutting around the house like a diva.
Yeah.
So thinking
Who, the cat?
Yeah.
Oh.
Thinking he's the shit. He is.
He'll do it for the next one.
Yeah. We were just priorly talking about assault and battery, and if you didn't understand, that was the night that Dee Dee and Neil met and had great fish and chips.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
But we're talking about the new life that was created out of that, thusly Clinton Street Baking Company. After that first date, how did your relationship progress?
Well, we just, that was a chance meeting. And then I actually thought he was gay just because it was the West Village and he was so nice and he was funny. And of course, if he's nice and funny in the West Village and he's single, no wedding band, he must be gay, right? I mean, I'd met countless gay men in the village, and
I was undercover in the West Village as a straight man portraying a gay guy so I can get a lot of women.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Yeah.
So I was really into him. I remembered him, and it was only like a 2-minute conversation. So when I left, I said, well, if I see him again, you know, I'd been like disappointed 1,000 times. You know, I was hitting almost 30 and I was like, it's been, you know, 10 years here. Let's see what happens. So if I see him again, then it's meant to be. And I did see him again about a week and a half later at World of Video down on Greenwich Ave, which was like my second home. And apparently it was his second home. We were both like single losers renting a lot of movies.
Yeah, I rented a lot of porn in that place. Man.
I rented a lot. Well,
my buddies
like my
would pick out the best, the hottest stuff for me.
That's for another show.
Yeah. I mean, I was like having like my own Paul Mazursky film festivals by myself, you know, seriously. So these guys knew me really well. And I was in World of Video. And long story short, I saw Neil come in. I was like, holy shit, there he is. The assault and battery guy. And
that's not a good thing to call somebody, though.
I know. I know. So
now the role is reversed.
Yeah.
So I pretended to the guys who all worked at World of Video, whom I knew very well, you know, through all these years, or they at least knew my movie taste. I was like, who's that guy? He reminded me of my cousin. And one of the guys that works there, Michael Neck, was like, oh, that's Neil Kleinberg. Oh, you'll love him. He's Jewish. He's funny. He's got kids. Do you mind? I think he's divorced. You know, and he told me all this stuff. So anyway, I went home, and I thought about him so much that I called Michael Neck at World of Video, also, which I'd never done.
Yeah.
And said, all right, set us up. And he called me back like 20 minutes later and said, you won't believe this, but World of Video and Neil's restaurant are having a joint Christmas party in 2 weeks. And I was like shocked because I couldn't believe he was a chef. I had just dated a chef and I had never had an ambition to date two chefs, not even one. So it's kind of shocking. So I waited for 2 weeks. I went and stalked his place a few times. I checked on him to see what he was like.
Where were you cooking at that point?
I was at Ezekiel's. I was cooking and teaching like at-risk youth
yeah.
for Covenant House. It was like my 5-year hiatus of cooking off the line and getting out of the restaurant business so I can enjoy my kids on the weekends
yeah.
and have like a Monday through Friday 9-to-5 gig. It was a good gig.
Yeah.
I ran this cafe. I trained a few kids.
You trained a lot of kids.
No, I trained a lot, but I'm saying over 5 years, you know, it was like so easy for me and so chill.
Yeah. And rewarding.
And rewarding at the same time. Yeah. But it was it was kind of painstaking because of the, you know, the structure of a nonprofit organization
yeah.
running a cafe. And if one side of it, they wanted to be profitable. The other side of it, they couldn't care because they had so much money and it was just to help the kids and blah, blah, blah. So I was kind of there for 5 years looking and thinking around and thinking, what am I going to do next? Or how am I going to, you know, have my own restaurant one day? Or how am I going to get another chef job if I've been kind of hiding in this place for 5 years?
But he did put out really great food. He put out a buffet, basically, kind of 80s style, but it was a lot of vegetables.
Yeah.
Vegetables. And everyone in the neighborhood loved it. And he got in very close with all the ladies at James Beard House because they all loved his food so much.
Yeah.
It was like great to have this delicious chef-cooked food, you know, right around the corner.
It was normal
was
stuff.
Megan there
it
then?
Was, yeah.
We met through Beard House, and I actually met you guys through Beard House the first time, too. So thank you up there, James Beard.
Yeah.
You've done good things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, so the story is that, back to the story, I think, that we, so I waited for the night of the party, which was at Fiddlesticks, which was next door. It's a bar. So that was really our first date.
Like an Irish bar.
A place I had never entered into ever in all the 10 years I'd lived in the neighborhood. And whatever, we had our first night there with the party. And then we literally were together every night since. And then we got married 10 months later.
Yeah.
Literally, it happened that way.
A month after 9/11, we got married.
Yeah.
Where? Yeah.
In a little Greek
Taverna.
Restaurant on Barrow Street in the West Village. It burnt down like 2 weeks after we got
that was
married.
My favorite Greek restaurant. I took all my dates there.
Yeah.
She took me there.
I took
great.
Him there.
And then after you knew he was the one, you burned it down.
That's right.
Yeah.
Jewish lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, right after we got married. And it was great food and it was delish.
Yeah.
We had an Israeli Greek band.
Klezmer band.
Yeah. But I mean, the place was tiny. I mean, it's like basically looked like this.
Yeah.
The backyard. A small.
So then after... you know, married, when does Clinton Street happen?
So,
well, all along, I mean, while I was doing the Covenant House Ezekiel's thing, I had this friend, partner, who said, why don't we do a place? He had a place up in Lincoln Center that, you know, it was like a sandwich muffin coffee shop. He said, why don't we do a business downtown where you bake and supply me for this place uptown and then open it, see how it goes. And I got this call for this guy who I worked with at the Plaza years ago and said, do you want to buy my restaurant? And I was like, no. And he's like, you have to. And it was like...
No. He said, Neil, you take this restaurant for me. I give it to you practically nothing.
Yeah. And he basically sold it to us for practically nothing.
Yeah.
And it
and
was
the rent was practically nothing.
It was a 9-year lease for $2,200 a month on Clinton or off Houston.
Yeah.
But Michael, 11 years ago, that was nothing there.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Drugs.
It was still dangerous.
What else was there? Like when you guys opened it up,
71?
Where would you go for coffee? Where would you?
Well, we didn't. We just went.
There was no place.
Yeah.
It was 71 Clinton, which was basically Wiley's place as the chef.
Yeah.
And he was making a name for himself at dinner.
Yeah.
The place wasn't open for lunch. It was nothing going on during the day.
And they were like all the Dominican places, but Neil had previously been married to a Dominican woman, so he was not at all, you know, he was into it. He'd spent a lot of time in the DR. His kids are Dominican, half Dominican. I mean, this was like a second home for him. He lived in Washington Heights. So whereas other people might have been put off, he felt at home.
So it was great. So in the daytime, I had this job at Ezekiel's, and at night, I would go and bake at Clinton Street. And Dee Dee and I weren't married yet, but she was always coaching me from the sidelines. You should do this. She did the logo and she did the design and brought the people in to paint the signs on it.
They were just air quotes if you want to know. Yeah. for design.
And so, you know, it just like developed into this coffee shop, and we baked the muffins and the biscuits and the scones and all of that kind of stuff and cookies and brownies and stuff. And it just evolved and developed into this place where we just opened for breakfast next and
well,
then
what
lunch
but before
and brunch.
Then, what really,
but before then,
before
go ahead.
What really happened is that Neil's partner, who it was a good business model because you should open, we opened a place, or they opened a place to supply another place that was already doing high volume. I mean, how many pieces of baked goods were they doing a day?
You know, we do like 2,000 pieces a day.
Okay, so yeah. That's a great business model to have a built-in account, and that's your number one account. But he was slowly diminishing in personality and spirit, and 9/11 happened, and he lived in Battery Park. And he had just like a front row seat to everything. And that kind of pushed him over the edge.
Yeah.
And so that was about, by the time that happened, that was 2-3 months into our marriage and owning the restaurant, I think, at the same time. And so we decided it was time to part ways with this guy. So that's when I started to get more serious and I bought him out.
Yeah.
And that's when we became partners. So we leave that out of the book because that's not really the point.
It was the first 2 years of the place evolving and turning into whatever. But, you know, it's...
So that was really the beginning of Clinton Street. So it was Neil and someone else, and then it became Neil and myself.
Yeah.
And soon it's just going to be Dee Dee.
Because Neil's going to kill himself.
After she kills me.
Yeah.
Or I kill myself.
You better get a better insurance policy first.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, better get a couple more of these books out first, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Clinton Street, that turning point was 2001.
Yep.
And how many years later
is
it now?
It's 2010. Yeah. And
it's 2011.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's really wild.
So we've been together 10, married 9, business partners
8.
Yeah, 8, I guess.
And how many covers do you do at brunch?
340 to 380.
Sometimes. Jeez, those are a lot of numbers.
Yeah, it's a lot of numbers. Yeah. And during the week, too, we do some, you know, we do like 280 to 300, and Mondays and Fridays are really busy because we get a lot of overflow from the weekend. Mm-hmm. And anytime there's a holiday weekend or a snow day or anything, we're packed.
Yeah. But up at community, we can do up to 600-700. We've done 800 covers a day.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But that thing has twice the amount of seats.
Three times. Yeah.
So, I mean, the charm of Clinton Street sometimes and the frustration is not being able to get a seat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for the regulars in the neighborhood. I really do. What can I do, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to know the times to come, and it's a happy problem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dinner.
Blessing and a curse.
Yeah, dinner is the way to go, I think. Or just like weekday breakfast or coming in an odd hour. I mean, we wait at one place only, and we just buck the system. We go to Pearl Oyster Bar is our favorite restaurant for cash. And we'll go at 6 o'clock, or we go and wait online at 5:30 like everybody else, and we get in the first seating.
I love the early bird, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's our favorite.
What about Barney Greengrass? I've always heard this as a reason why you live where you live.
As much anymore.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to, you know, cut down on the bagels and the Bialys, but it is... When Jade, our daughter who's 4 now, when she was like 2.5 and just able to sit in a restaurant and whatever, have breakfast, Saturday mornings was a tradition that we would walk from 81st Street to 86th and go to Barney Greengrass, and she would sit on the counter or next to me, and we'd order like a proper Sunday Jewish brunch.
Yeah.
Dee Dee would be off doing yoga or her exercise or whatever she wanted to do, and it was like our time.
And
people were always amazed by Jade because she would order a Nova appetizer. It came with a toasted bagel.
Yeah.
It's Nova, just sliced, beautiful, silky Nova with a couple of olives and some capers and a slice of tomato and onion. She loved the olives and the capers. She ate the whole entire order of smoked salmon and would say, "Dad, I think I want a side of scrambled eggs now." And I'd be sitting eating my, you know, my favorite brunch, like smoked sturgeon and eggs with vegetable cream cheese on a toasted bialy.
Sounds good, right? And so
I may be going for that right after this. Yeah.
What's really funny, Michael, is one of the waiters there, and the waiters at Barney Greengrass are very brusque and very impossible. They throw things at you, and they're not nice. One of the waiters there, David, he's like a regular customer at Clinton Street, and I constantly see him at the bakery, and he says, "Hey, I didn't see you last week." Or I say, "Hey, where have you been?"
But Neil and I had our first morning date at Barney Greengrass.
Yes, we did. And we sat in that tiny little cramped counter Sunday with the New York Times and us. And it was one of our favorite haunts.
Yeah, it was great.
It's amazing that we've barely spoken about your food, and we've talked about every place else that you love. And maybe we'll leave them hanging with that. Our listeners can check out the cookbook, which, you know, isn't just pancakes, which Dee Dee and Neil are lauded for, their blueberry pancakes with maple butter and... fried chicken, which I think is just everything. The crab cakes, I can't get them out of my mind. And I can keep on going.
You love those.
Yeah.
Well, yours good that you did at home, right? Did you make them? Oh, you haven't made them yet.
I haven't. We've been contemplating. Actually, I bet you, if I open up my book that I have right now, which I have for you guys to sign.
Yes.
It's the crab cake.
Yeah, see, so I have it marked off. It just hasn't gotten to it yet.
Yep.
So it was hard to photograph all this food.
Yeah.
And I don't mean because it wasn't beautiful, because it was. It was so easy, and the flow of just doing this cookbook may have come from one that I've been a customer and always been enamored with your food, but then also the exuding Jewish grandmother that Neil is and that I miss just good. Made the relationship to make this imagery that much easier. So nice.
Thank you. That's really sweet.
Thank you.
Fantastic book.
Yeah. So happy that we had you.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that, you know, I kept your card for like 8 years.
I bet you have one of those old school Vista print cards that says like, print 100 business cards for free on the back.
I have your postcard I saved.
Oh, geez, that's even older. That's 2004.
Yeah, I was like, this guy's going to go somewhere. I saved it.
Didi always knew, and she always told me, when we do our cookbook, I have the photographer, and that's Michael Harlan Durko from The Beard House.
Thank you.
She always knew. She has a vision, and she sticks with it, and that's what makes her so good.
Well, again,
she stuck with me for 10 years.
Praise and props to James Beard, too. Yeah. But, yeah, check out this cookbook if you haven't done it already. Stop by Clinton Street weekdays, weeknights. Didi and Neil, thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Hearst Ranch for sponsoring, Jack Inslee for producing. And we'll have you back here Tuesday, 3 p.m. Cheers.